It was almost like some religious revivalist meeting.
They took it to the government.
Those fellas totally gutted by that.
The trouble is spending too much time in your mind.
Well, I don't want to learn. I want to go out and smash things with hammers.
You work in, I guess, music, comedy, theatre, film over the years. Just as a bit of an introduction to people, do you have a preference at this point?
Theatre was my first love, and it was actually trying to get across into film was something that I never really thought was going to be possible, and that's actually how the whole doc came about. I had done theatre, but then I spent quite a lot of time in edit suites and all the rest of it and felt, well, you know, I think a lot of this seems to be a technical issue, so I need to just learn how to do it. So I spent a couple of years just doing DVD extras, doing short films, studying at Raindance, who do a lot of really excellent courses in London. And I was actually working on the classic sort of first-time indie director thing, which is like a horror film. and one of the things I remember, one of the lecturers going, write what you know, do what you know. And of course it came to me that maybe Eddie had actually, I've worked for years, he said, well, why don't you film one of my specials? I need someone to do that. And I was going, well, there's no possibility that I can do that, because that's even more technical than just a single camera shoot. It's a complete non-starter. But it set me thinking, and then I thought, well, actually, maybe I should do a documentary. Maybe that would be the thing to do. Even though, in fact, I'd never done anything that was unscripted, anything that was non-narrative, anything that was, you know, you rely on what you can get from the interview. So it was a highly technical sort of adventure, which was something that I never thought was going to end up being so difficult. So it sort of, in a roundabout way, I ended up doing something that was not really particularly my interest, but has become so because of just the time spent doing it. And with someone whom I now know is an extremely difficult subject, because you know, unlike most performers, he doesn't give stuff up very easily, where most performers, I mean, it doesn't take very much for them to spill everything. and so that's really where I feel like I've spent years learning a huge amount of stuff that I'm now using, now that I've gone back to more narrative style. I've been back working on a narrative movie now, so this is where I feel comfortable, this is where I feel good, and this is probably, I think, what I've always been wanting to do. But the documentary has itself been a huge journey for me, of learning and of discovery. So, yeah.
So, and you say it's been a huge journey. I was looking at it, you started working on it, I guess, back in 2003, was that right?
That's right, yeah. Well, I mean, we thought we were just filming DVD extras. That was when I was still working on a different project. And I was thinking, well, all of it helps, you know, it's all experience, it's all good, you know, I'll do whatever just to learn while I'm studying as well. Even it's hands-on experience, you can't really, you know, you can't do without that. And then as we did more of it, the various stories seemed to appear. They were not well fleshed out, and it took an awful lot of work to make them kind of into something that was apparently a solid story, because they were very bitty. But and also I didn't have the skill at that point to tie them into something, and also possibly not the objectivity, which I developed as a result of all of the succeeding work. But it was never intended to be what it ended up being, and we actually started touting it as something a year later when it didn't even really exist. So it was a strange journey and a tremendous learning curve, but I don't regret a moment of it now, because I'm finding now I'm going back to something that I'm more familiar with, which is a more narrative and fictional style. I can't believe how precise it's made me about a lot of decisions and scenes and how things turn and what's important and what's not. It's made me focus from just those hours and hours and hours and hours spent watching often really not very good footage, archival stuff where you'd have maybe 3 hours in which maybe 30 seconds is valuable. You know, it's drudgery, but the fact is, my God, it makes you focused in the end. So, I feel like this has been kind of a tremendously great learning curve. It's now tied up my theatre background back into all of this, and it's now I feel like everything's sort of meeting where it should do, but I just thought that this would happen much sooner. I didn't think it was going to be so hard. But as I say, I don't regret it at all. At this point, I feel like, okay, so now I can bring all that wealth of experience and information to all my future projects. So.
And just staying on that, so what point did you realise that you were actually telling Eddie's life story rather than actually just recording his latest tour?
Well, I was trying to do it by the book because that's one of the things you're supposed to do in a documentary, but I didn't actually... I mean, what happened there was very odd. You know, obviously you heighten certain things because you're trying to tell a greater truth, and, you know, sometimes you might not have absolute literal footage of something. In fact, that almost never happens, but it's what you feel that the greater story is, and it became very apparent that that was underlying so much of, you know, what Eddie did, but it, without him actually coming to that realization or revealing it himself, it really didn't work. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's like a typical, you know, narration documentary. So then Eddie this, that, and the other, and then you show appropriate footage, and it was, and I knew whatever else, we weren't going to do one of those, because it was just, you know, why bother? Why put that much effort in and just do that? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, that's great, but it's television, and I wanted, more than anything, I wanted to make a feature.
Yeah.
And trying to get those moments to tie together very, very difficult. And it seemed to me that the fact that he was unduly upset by what was effectively, I mean, it was a frivolous accusation.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was that his reaction was so extreme. You know, anyone might have been a bit pissed off, but it was interesting that, you know, it was as if he'd been told off by the headmistress. It was an extraordinary, you know, he became completely paranoid. Now, we weren't able to get any of that footage at the time, but I thought it was quite instructive that he would be so stung by such a thing, because he tried to do everything fairly, and, you know, the last thing that he was one of the people that were held up in these, you know, it was a consumer watchdog program, and most of the people on there are genuinely bad guys, and they are trying to pull stunts, and often they're big companies and so on. And I think if it hadn't been for the fact that he'd made such efforts to be the good guy always, you know, which not everyone does, let's face it, not that that matters, that's not my judgment, that's just a fact, it's just like that's how it is. It was just very interesting that it upset him so much. And then I started thinking, I wondered if it was tied in with, you know, his mum and all the rest of it. And as we gradually kind of dug deeper, we found all of that, but what we didn't have was anything to show it. And so what I didn't want is just, and that, plus the fact that Eddie would never actually talk on camera. He's really good at interviews, but like a politician, he's like an entertaining politician. If you go somewhere he doesn't want to go, he will talk away, but he will avoid really giving you an answer. Then you'll think you've got an answer, but you haven't really got an answer. And in a way, you know, if you're a good journalist, then you'll be able to weave that in with your own opinion. You'll be able to write a great piece, which, you know, is what I thought you could do with film, but you can't with film. If you don't have it on the screen, people know, they feel it. They know if it's faked. They know if they haven't seen the thing that gives them the sense. They know it. And we actually were about to give up on the movie because we had tried to chase a truly, genuinely revealing interview for 4 years, I think, at one point, and we were just going, okay, we have to stop now. I mean, although it was very, very low budget, very indie, it's still, there's a limit to how long you can prevail on people's favors and go, can we do one more shoot this weekend? You know, there's a point where you go, okay, we have to stop. And actually, within 2 weeks of deciding that that was the case, he did the interview that really was the crux of the whole thing. I think he realized that maybe there was something he wanted to say. I think it felt like for all of them, I mean, and it was the same little team I'd had all along, and we just looked at each other for like 10 minutes after that going, oh my God. Because suddenly it was a film and not, you know, a puff piece, really. And we think this, and here's our opinion of what Eddie does, and here's, we'll show you something, you know. And I thought, no, we've come too far to do something like that. You know, that's fine. For, you know, it's all depending on what you want to do it for, but it was just like, that's not what I'd been trying to do in the first place. So that was a very lengthy trawl to do that. And then once we had that, it was piecing together all the pieces of footage. I mean, we had hundreds of hours of footage, but a lot of it was rubbish. You know, we're just little kernels of things here and there that we could use. So we had to do a lot of stringing together technically of pieces from disparate places and people and stock footage to try and make, you know, some of the footage that's in it, the old stuff, some of it has got lots of tiny cuts where we've actually had to put in extra stuff that's from the same period, but from random places to try and extend something into what looks like a nice 1 or 2 minute piece. And I must say that I was rather pissed off. People were going, oh, well, it's all right with all of that footage. And I'm going, you have no idea the months that I spent in an edit trying to make it look like it's a whole 2 minute piece and it's like 20 cuts of nothing. But I mean, I get now, you know, having been promoting it for a year, I feel like actually that's a huge compliment that people can't see. Because I'm telling you, you could see it before. You could absolutely see it. So it's nice. It feels like it's been worth it.
And I mean, you sort of touched on it a bit there as well, where the whole the idea that there's very intimate moments that you do get to, and there's a few rare occasions, as you said, where he does open up. And then I'm thinking particularly at the moment where he's talking about his mother. And obviously breaks down into tears on camera. What did you? Is there a pressure? I mean, to include some of the to not include some of those things, or are you left alone as a filmmaker? And I guess what I'm trying to get to there is, you've been quite close to the subject for a long period of time.
Yeah, we've worked together for many years. That's right.
And yeah, so does that make things more difficult when you're making that sort of thing, or does it make the whole process easier for you as a filmmaker?
Two things. Because initially, years ago, we had a relationship. Obviously, I know him very well and can tell when, you know, what he's saying is not true, or not true. You know, it's not the satisfying, truthful conclusion that you're seeking in any kind of dramatic endeavor. And I include documentary in that because, you know, all things are that, really. Any form, any art form, that's what it's about. But I think it also enabled me to be a little more persistent instead of just settling, you know, going, well, that'll do. I thought, well, yeah, it might do, but it's still not going to be something that he's going to be proud of, never mind me, in a few years' time. It'll be like, oh, if we'd only just gone the extra mile. On the other hand, it made it quite difficult to push because you're thinking, God, this is really hard.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is, I think after 4 years of trying to get something where he evaded us again and again and again, and then I started to notice that he did it in interviews with other people too, where he appears to be telling you everything, but he's telling you like it's a press release rather than it's coming from the inside. And of course, the medium that is film requires you to experience it, to see someone have that revelation at that moment, and then we can absolutely go on that journey with them. We can empathize, we can absolutely feel it and get that catharsis that they do. And there's no question that that was an extraordinary revelation, something that I had not ever seen him do before. It was an amazing moment. And it's odd because, you see, you have the line between being intrusive, which I'm very, very aware of, and feeling like, oh, it's gratuitous, and feeling like, no, but we're going to handle it respectfully and not abuse it. And I think gaining his trust that he knew that was the case, even though I have to say, just in answer to your earlier question, in no way was he intrusive at all. He had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the doc apart from showing up for some interviews. So we didn't. There was no pressure in that way whatsoever. I think in a way he kind of wanted it to be revealed properly, and sort of didn't want to have any more to do with it. It was like he wanted to show up, do his thing, and go away again, and let us get on with it, which was, you know, a tremendous freedom. It would have been very weird if he'd been, you know, sort of saying, I think you should do this or that. But it was almost like, I think he wanted to be pushed to the point where he was really telling the truth. It's just that I think none of us realized how bloody difficult it was going to be to get there. And, you know, I had the same team all along, so it was me and my lovely cameraman and sound man, and we just, you know, we did interview after interview, and, you know, there'd be like a moment in it that was usable, which maybe would make it into, you know, voiceover, but it was very, very, very hard, but it was worth it in the end, and I feel like we did a respectful job, and I feel like the conclusion was earned. But building, you know, building the foundation upon which that revelation came was then the difficult bit. That was where all that footage and all that, trying to make it all work and feel like the journey that you were going on, because there are three parallel narratives going on, as you're aware, and trying to make it sit right was really, really, really tricky. Because I've friends of mine have done documentaries, and what I've seen is, you know, performers generally are of a nature where they will talk and spill and emote, and that's the nature of what they do. And Eddie is very unusual, and he's absolutely the opposite of that. He's more scientific, more mathematical, for all the humor and all the rest of it. He's a very odd mixture of left and right brain, and unfortunately for any documentary maker, that's really difficult. It's difficult to get stuff that is what people pay their money to see, you know.
I mean, you do paint that picture quite well, actually, throughout the film of this very single-minded subject, who, and particularly, I think there was that show that he was determined to give in French, for example, that you showed the footage of, and then I think, that your ultimate revelation at the end of that does show that it was a difficult thing for him, him to get to.
Yeah, very much so.
I guess the other thing was, as well, that was interesting, because you've been working on it for so long, you'd had access to quite a number of people along the way, I guess, throughout his tour and throughout a number of countries. How did you go about approaching it? I mean, you got some big names there to talk as well. I mean, you approached, obviously, George Clooney and Robin Williams to speak on the thing. Was that... And obviously all those other vox pops you did at the start as well sort of complement that nicely.
Yeah.
At what point, I mean, how did you go about getting access to them? Were they quite willing to speak about Eddie, or was it something you had to doggedly pursue to get those quotes?
It is hard because people are so busy and the demands on their time are so huge. I was Ocean's 11. It was 12, I think. Again, we were shooting a little bit on that, and that was how it came about. And I ended up talking to the producer of that movie, Jerry Weintraub, about doing this documentary. And he gave me some advice, and then I did laugh when, you know, almost at the same time, he'd done one on himself. Obviously, because he had lots of opinions on how you should do documentary. That was very funny. But as a result of that, it sort of paved the way. It was a very democratic set. It paved the way for me to be able to approach George. And bless him, he was extremely willing and very supportive. And I mean, I've never seen anyone that was such an utter pro. He walked into... We finally managed to make the timetables all work. And it was hilarious. It was like a movie in itself. he came into the hotel where we were filming. He'd already got appointments there. He came in, sat down, he knew exactly what he was going to do, he'd already worked out his answers, and we shot for 5 minutes, and that was it. He packed up and left, and I thought, oh my God, I don't know what we've got, I have no idea. And I really panicked, because I thought, you know, because obviously when you're slowly trying to build up a picture of a person, it's a very different thing. And in fact, what he did was perfect, because it's just a punctuation thing, and he'd already thought about it, and he's so smart. I mean, when I watched it back, I went, oh, my God, he knew exactly what we needed before I even asked.
Yeah.
And he just, when you see the raw footage, it's like, it's so precise and so specific and so funny. I mean, there's more of it, but we couldn't put it all in. It's tremendously funny. I just thought, wow, now that's a real pro at work. You know, he's thought about what's required. He comes in, he does it brilliantly, and goes, that's it. I just went, whoa, there's a lesson. And Robin, of course, he had been to several gigs. Robin, I think you may have seen in the documentary, he actually was one of the... When Eddie first did L.A., he was one of the main names on the board bringing him in. So, of course, he had an ongoing interest. And he was at one of the gigs we filmed in San Francisco. And so we asked him then, and he said, yeah, he would do it. And it was just a question of, again, trying to coincide times and dates. Robin's interview was fabulous. It was absolutely fantastic and really funny. But unfortunately, we were restricted by his lawyer from using more than 5 minutes because for any promotional thing. Now, I'm sure we could have used longer, but the problem is, you know, it's a documentary about Eddie, fundamentally. I mean, I would love one day to release little bits of it, but I might have my toes cut off. It was very, very funny. Not by Robin, but by his lawyers. It was, I mean, really, really lovely, funny stuff. Very warm and just a beautiful interview, to be honest. But again, you know, it's trying to stick to what's strictly relevant. You end up cutting things that you think, I love this, but I can't stay in.
well, since you sort of brought it up, you'd love to explore that interview more, but have you ever wanted to explore another person in as much detail as if you've explored?
Well, the irony is, I was never intending to do documentary because, you know, narrative and scripted stuff was my love always. I mean, I came from theatre into film, and that was always what I did. And I had absolutely no idea what I was getting myself into. So, obviously, I studied up on all the standard documentary texts and all the rest of it and how you're supposed to do it and blah, blah, blah. Although now there is no standard way. I mean, it's extrapolated into so many different styles now. You know, everything from verite to, you know, extremely manipulated footage. It's very strange. but it's not something that was my interest, and it's definitely not something that I was thinking of doing again. Although, ironically, I have been approached to do a couple of things, can't say what, but they're kind of interesting, and I'm going, well, after being away for it for a year, maybe I would consider it. I mean, I just leapt back into doing narrative. I'm actually working on a script right now with an Australian writer and director, Lisa Robertson.
Right.
Who's just had an award-winning short all over the place for Commerce. She's just been doing all the festival circuit in the U.S., and she's a dear friend and very, very talented lady, and she's working on my latest outing, this script. It's a musical film, actually, but it's set in the late 80s, poll tax, Margaret Thatcher, London, and so we're working on that. And that's where my heart is.
Hmm.
But I have to say that, yeah, I mean, it's funny, lately I've started feeling more objective about it all. I think it's having some distance from the hours and hours and hours looking at tiny, 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 tiny bits of detail on footage. And I'm thinking, oh, maybe I would do it again. I'm not racing and sticking my hand in the air going, yes, please, me first, but, you know. I suppose I know that I could do it now. And it wouldn't make me go, but if you'd asked me that a year ago, I'd have gone, never, never, no, I'd rather be boiled in oil. Because this was particularly grueling. I mean, what was interesting, even with the Robin interview, and just the various other people we interviewed, is that most performers just generally are much more revelatory about themselves. They give you much more. However, I think that very fact, in the end, in the very, very, very end, played to our advantage, because it's like people know that this is rare, you know.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't know. I mean, I would have given up a million times because it was so hard. And so it's really funny, you know. You interview somebody else, and you go, "Oh, it's all there. We got it all in 20 minutes." With Eddie, it's like 20 years later.
God, you should say that, because I spoke to a filmmaker the other day, and he was saying that as soon as he finished the film, he never wanted to make another film again.
That was it.
Now, you know, 6 months later, and he's promoting the film, he's happy to talk about the next script.
That's so true. I mean, it's such hard work. It is. It's tremendously grueling. It's like boot camp, and it goes on and on and on and on and on, and there's always a disaster every single day. There is no day without a disaster. But what's nice is, you know, once it's actually out there and you're talking to other people, you realize that that's the way it is. That's what you bought into it for, and if you can't hack it, then get out. If you love it, then get used to it, and just, you know, have people you can go, you know what they did today? And then you go, okay. You know, it's not, you know, at least you're not doing brain surgery, you know.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I guess you've mentioned it a couple of times. The latest film that you're working on now, I did know that it was a musical film set in the late 80s London. And is it around the stand-up circuit as well? Is that right? Or is that
it's a separate film? Well, to be honest with you, it's my, it's sort of my biography. And it was sort of the alternative to something, because I had lived some of the around, so that's how, because I knew Eddie years ago, and I had done all of the Edinburgh stand-up circuit, the street performer. I had been around those same circuits, and I'd always found them absolutely fascinating. And one thing I always fancied doing, because it was my special love, was a documentary about the street performers of Covent Garden, particularly Covent Garden, because it has a very specific and focused kind of hierarchy and system there, and very, very old, you know, it was way back. So that was something I was always really interested in. And then I think partly during the frustration of trying to make this work without the telling interviews that we needed, I started just scribbling in my off moments, just, you know, trying to write up a different story. What if we had someone who would tell us everything? And so I started coming up with a parallel, alternative story. And that was just to let off steam, really, while, you know, while we were doing the grueling, trawling through. I mean, we had hundreds of hours of footage, a lot of which was really not very good and not very interesting. And that frustration actually led to this. And then I span off that, and then I started working with Lisa, and she said, why don't you make it your story? Why don't you? And then gradually that's what it developed into. And so it's a sort of an autobiographical tale, but obviously there's going to be, you know, there's a lot more to it than that. But since the job was half done, it seemed like the obvious place to move forward to. So, you know, so that's what's happening. And, you know, the response so far has been very positive, when I've shown people pieces of what's there already. So that's great.
And so it's still in script stage at the moment, is that right? So you're...
Yeah. We're in the middle of work. That's why I'm going back to LA to continue on that. It should be done by Christmas. That's the plan. Yeah.
Christmas, yeah. And I guess same question as before. You're obviously you're even closer to the subject this time around in this script. do you find yourself doing the same sort of revelatory confessions in your script that you found in your subjects, or are you
well, the difference is that because it's scripted and it's narrative and it's fictional officially, that means that I can draw on all the things that I know, like you do in a novel, you know, and tell a different story, and also tell the wonderful stories of the people that I knew and the other people that I met, and some of whom were touched on in the documentary, but I was frustrated by the fact that I wasn't able to develop their stories the way I really wanted to, because obviously there was one overriding subject for the documentary, whereas with the movie, I mean, what I'm looking along the lines of is something that's somewhere between sort of Moulin Rouge and all that jazz. So you have something that is incredibly colorful and beautiful, and it shows these people as they are meant to be, a bit like the Captain Keno, who's the one who actually came up with You've Got to Believe. He was the one who told Eddie that. And he's a stalwart of Covent Garden. He's still there. And all of that story, I mean, what those people are and how interesting all of that is, that whole lifestyle and what it represented as a kind of a riposte to, you know, the kind of greed of the 80s. And what was so weird is as I was writing it gradually, look what's just happened in the last two or three years. So it's been weirdly timely. I did think it would come around again. I didn't realize it was actually going to happen as I was writing it. That was very, very strange. So it's all suddenly extremely relevant, and it feels like it was just meant to be. Very, very odd. But very exciting also, because it means I can develop characters that I found fascinating and I wanted to hear more about. And because it's ostensibly fictional, I can write a scene. You know, it's like if we haven't got what we need, we can write it. That's the joy of not doing documentary.
Yeah.
You know, you go, I need this in order to achieve this, which is what I'm more used to. And of course, the documentary, you don't have that choice. You must find it in the footage or find a way of telling it that is right there and immediate and factual, demonstrable.
Yeah.
You don't have those restrictions in fiction. Plus the fact that you can go, oh, we can't afford the big castle in the distance shot, so let's make it a box. Okay, so now we have to find a reason for a box instead of a castle. Okay, and you do, you just do, and especially the joy of low budget. You know, I think it actually provokes the most amazing, wonderful imaginative responses to that. It's beeping out.
I
forgot what that was.
I think that's telling me to wind up.
Yeah, I think they are. Oh dear. Oh, I'm sorry. I was enjoying.
No. So I guess because you're not going to have people running up to you saying, "Please don't include my story."
No. It's much more. I mean, it's almost like Oliver. It's much more archetypal. It's much bigger than that, and it's stylized as well. It's going to be stylized, but in a very kind of cool rock and roll way. So I think no one is going to be unhappy at all. I think actually, if anything, people will be very flattered. I mean, not universally so, because the story itself is the rise and fall of something that is fictional, but everything around it is true. All the people that I knew, all these amazing characters, amazing. You know, I mean, it's a wealth of experience, and I suddenly thought, God, I have that sitting there, and it's all true. So I'm just mining it, you know, for everything that it's worth.
Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Talking to you. And good luck with it. And I look forward to seeing the film when it's finally out.
Thank you so much. Well, hopefully a lot shorter time than this one took. That's probably true. Okay, pleasure to talk to you.
Again, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.